Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Welcome to Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. Also follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. This special late Sunday, early Monday edition of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Use the promo code Locked On at MyBookie.ag. As always, I am here with my co-host, Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, we got a win. How you doing, brother?
Oh, still recovering from that win, man. A roller coaster of a game. Just sitting there for the entirety of like second quarter through like most of the third, just going, all right, I know at some point they're going to let the Giants back into this game.
You even put it on Twitter, yeah.
You can't be playing that way at home and then be incurring all of these injuries and not capitalizing when you get down, you know, past the 50, which we'll talk about, and then expect to, you know, escape with the game. It's not that easy. And so, you know, it was just kind of like, you know, watching the slow motion train crash. And then you get to the point where, and this is also what I was talking about on Twitter, was saying, okay, we love to talk about Carson Wentz as a franchise guy who's he's a winner and he's a stand up dude and he's the face of your franchise. Okay, sounds great. But the back half of that is he only had one fourth quarter, you know, taking the lead sort of drive in his entire career. He was 1-7 in games that were decided by one possession or less. Mm-hmm. What was he going to do? And he took us down the field for a game tying drive, got the ball back, and took us down the field for a game winning drive. And yeah, sure, the second one was only 19 yards. It was one pass, but still, you know what I mean? Like, he did what he was supposed to do. And so, I mean, I'm glad it came out the way that it did. And obviously, like, you know, big moment for Jake Elliott too, coming off of the street. That's important for him to get that kick. His confidence, you know, being put on the practice squad by the Bengals, it's very important for him to get that kick.
Elliott coming into this in college as a freshman. So in case you missed the game for some reason, Jake Elliott kicks a 61-yarder to win it for us.
With 1 second left on the clock.
Exactly. And his long in college was a 56-yarder, which came as a freshman. His long as a senior was 50 yards. So he hadn't ever kicked anything within 5 yards of that in the last 3 years. So huge surprise for everybody, considering he missed, what was it, a 43-yarder or 46-yarder earlier in the game?
He hit a 40-yarder to tie it up at 24. He missed like a 52-yarder.
Right. Okay. But yeah, anyway, look, I was honestly more worried with Odell being back there. And I'm like, he's going to kick this thing short. And we aren't going to have anybody that's going to be able to track down Odell. Because, you know, with all those big hog mollies on the field and whatnot, and backup tight ends and all that good stuff, it's really hard to keep up with someone like Odell when everything's just all over the place. It's not like really a scenario you practice a lot. So when the ball was up in the air and I saw Odell like start to adjust, and I'm like, oh man, here we go. Not for a second did I think that was going in. However, I will say, baby Augustus was put into my arms on that last drive. And my good luck charm has gotten us 2 wins. The Fletcher Cox on Kirk Cousins incompletion / fumble that was ruled a fumble that we didn't deserve at all. And then the 61-yarder. So I'm feeling pretty good about baby Augustus and what he's bringing to this team. Speaking of what people are bringing to this team, let's talk about the run game, man, because we had we had some different contributors and they all looked they all played really well. Blunt played well. Wendell Smallwood played well. He had some tough runs. And Corey Clement had the touchdown, the big touchdown there. He played well, too, and contributed on special teams. So I know you got all the stats, but just the fact that, and we were talking about it before the show, the first 30 plays, 18 runs, 12 passes. Mm-hmm. It looks like Doug Peterson came out with the mindset that we are going to run the ball and we're going to stick with it. Now, maybe Blunt's early success made that a little bit easier, and we'll see how that goes throughout the season, but it's encouraging so far.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have Wendell Smallwood with 12 for 71 yards. That's 5.9 yards per carry, which is great numbers for him. Smallwood is not the prettiest runner. He has more than a few positive runs where he just kind of like bounced around and like found a crease and broke a tackle, and it doesn't look good. It's not like, you know, know, pure running back style stuff. But hey, it was production. We're not really going to turn up our nose at anything we can get at this point.
Yeah.
Obviously, then LeGarrette Blount, really, he was the one who impressed today with his vision, his decisiveness, his power in the hole. I think that he was pissed that he didn't get those looks against Kansas City. I think that he expected to get more totes, you know, on a consistent basis per game. And so I think he had something to prove coming out here in week three, which was awesome. I mean, for me, the most important, like the biggest thing when it comes to the running game was this. The Eagles are down by three with 3 minutes left on the clock and all three timeouts. They have the ball at the 25-yard line. You have a quick pass to Wendell Smallwood to pick up 9 yards, and then three straight runs on that drive. Smallwood picks up 20, Smallwood picks up 9, Blount picks up 6. And then they even went to run the ball again, and then there was the Jeffrey penalty, and all of a sudden it's first and 25, and you kind of got to throw the ball a little bit more. But the fact of the matter was, and you know, does this detract a little bit from Wentz's game-tying drive? I mean, certainly he didn't attempt that many passes to get them going down the field, but when it was time to move the ball consistently to tie the football game and to give your team a chance, Doug Peterson turned toward a run game that had been working for the entire game, which, you know, just because it was working for the whole game didn't mean he was going to go there, you know, and he did. And it responded. And that's huge. I mean, best friend of a second-year quarterback, right, is going to be developing that consistent run game. That was awesome to see.
Yeah, and I think Blount definitely heard the podcast where I ranked them 10th out of 10 on our offseason edition. So my plan worked to a T. So I'll take some credit for that. What makes the run game success even more surprising was the carousel at left guard.
Yeah, what the heck was that, man? What was going on?
It's not like there was an injury. They were switching Chance Warmack with Steve Wisniewski every other drive as if it was like Auburn quarterbacks or something like that.
People are tweeting at me like, "What?" I'm saying, "Why is this happening?" People go, "It's because it's like 100 degrees and they're tired and they're thirsty." Yeah, because go find me any other game in the history of football where teams have rotated in their offensive lines because it's hot outside. Come on.
Living in the Tampa Bay area, I've never seen that from the Bucs, and if we were going to see it anywhere, it would be with the Bucs, Miami, whatnot. It just doesn't happen. That's not a viable excuse. I don't get the logic behind it. We're recording this pretty much right after the game, so we haven't seen any of the press conferences to hear what Doug Peterson has to say about it, so that's something we're going to be looking forward to diving into as the week moves on before we get to the Los Angeles Chargers. But yeah, it should not be Chance Warmack in there anymore. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week, whether it's Steelers against Patriots or Bears against the Lions. Well, let me tell you this. Where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing. And they have the fastest payout. Seriously, it's just 2 business days. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. Use promo code LOEagles, that's LOEagles, to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
There were a couple of plays where, I mean, I was blown away by Wisniewski's performance in general, but like one of those, the 20-yard run it was for Smallwood, they ran right behind Wisniewski and Kelsey, who Kelsey had a great game starting at center. He should absolutely be there consistently, and that's never been something we've really had in doubt. He's always been a potential trade piece, but you know, his starting potential has never been something that we should be questioning. But yeah, they ran it directly off that left side multiple times on that final drive with great success. Wisniewski was climbing to the second level very well. He was generating good movement. He's the left guard. I mean, if you're not going to play Sambolo and develop him as your second year guy, stop screwing around with Chance Warmack. It's Wisniewski.
Yeah, and on the first snap of the game, Wentz did hold on to the ball a little bit too long on that first snap, but Chance just let a guy like right by him, and I was like, okay, this is not going to work out. Mm-hmm. So, all right, do you owe an apology to Vinny Curry and his run-stopping prowess thanks to his fourth down stop that was huge?
The thing about Vinny Curry is that he's always been just a reckless gap shooter when it comes to run defense, which can be insanely frustrating and ridiculous and absurd. At times like fourth and goal with 1 yard to go, being adept at shooting gaps is ideal. That's exactly what you want to do. Just get in there and cause problems. That was a fantastic play. I mean, looking at this game, which obviously ended with a three pointer with a field goal, you know, with 1 second left to win the game. So it's a 3-point deficit at the end of it all. For the Eagles defense to have fourth and goal in the second one, but to have 2 fourth down stands
right
in the red zone, mm-hmm. and the Giants come away with 0 points is crazy. I mean, firstly, there were like 6 fourth down attempts in this game, which was nuts. Like, that should tell you the nature of this game. That's yep. absurd. But for the Philly defense to have incurred the injuries that they did with Fletcher Cox going down with a calf, you've got Jordan Hicks going down with the ankle, and you've already got Rodney McLeod, Corey Graham, Jalen Watkins, Ronald Darby, all not playing. Those are six guys. Well, those are four guys who are starters, and then two guys who would have been starting given the already four injuries that had occurred. For all of that depth to come out, for the Eagles to hold on fourth down as consistently as they did, not only speaks... I think it speaks to the depth of the defense a little bit, but even more so, it speaks to who Jim Schwartz is as a coordinator and what he expects out of his team. Okay, we don't have the guys in there. We're still going to go out there and make plays. That's what we do.
So with fourth downs, let's talk about a fourth down that was pretty controversial. Early in the game, we're up 7-0. We're on the Giants' 43-yard line, and on 4th and 8, we decide to go for it, take a sack, and put our defense in a bad situation. I didn't agree with the call. Now, look, I understand the net on a punt from the 43 has a maximum net of 42. That's fine. Mm-hmm. I get that, but try to pin him inside the 10. At the very least, you at least pin them down there. And, you know, if you get a 3-and-out, then you're pretty much in the same position anyway. So I don't understand the idea of going for it on 4th and 8 there when you have the lead early in the game. I'm cool with being aggressive. If it were 4th and 3, maybe I would be a little more understanding of it. But 4th and 8, the percentages of that are so poor. I don't understand. And I don't know if you agree or disagree with the call or not. So what's your take on that 4th and 8 call?
Right, I'll put it to you this way. BLG of Bleeding Green Nation tweeted out the math that says, hey, go for it on 4th and 8, given, like, you know, the net and like the likelihood of completing it, so on and so forth. My response to that is simply, you know, there's a reason that we don't have computers as head coaches. It's because
math
it's more than
math. Stupid.
Okay, math's not stupid. But says the guy who does jersey number and end zone analytics. But anyway, there's a reason we don't have computers as head coaches. You know, in that moment, where, you know, obviously, you know, the Doug Peterson thought is, okay, my defense is killing it. You know, we're holding them down. They haven't been able to move the football whatsoever. You know, I can go for this. And even if I don't get it, my defense will be able to respond. Well, you know, my initial thought there is, you know, given the way that the Giants have been playing so poorly, if I don't convert this 4th and 8, they'll take that very little momentum and try to make a lot out of it. That could be the spark that they need. I don't want to give them the opportunity to find hope, to find revitalization. I mean, the Giants weren't able to, you know, generate anything off of that turnover on downs. But then you look at the turnover of Zach Ertz, where he fumbled the football early in the fourth. That made it 14-14 after they scored following that, right? So that's how teams pick up momentum, especially when they're on the road, to get the crowd out of it, you know? So question the call, whatever. I tweeted it out, and I still fully believe it. More worrisome than Doug Peterson going for it on 4th and 8 from his own 43 is the fact that Carson Wentz had the first down two different ways and decided to take neither of them. He does, and he just freezes in the pocket and freezes in his read sometimes inexplicably. And like, he didn't get away with it that time, but the Eagles come away with a W, and it's too easy to forget, but he gets away with it, and it's not good.
Yeah, we give Wentz a lot of credit for being able to escape the pocket and run through arm tackles and make some crazy plays, which he did this game. But there's, you know, you take the good with the bad. Speaking of analytics, I just ran the numbers. The Eagles are 1-0 with the green end zones, so that's a plus. And let's go to the secondary. Our issues there, which broke down, we were up 14-0. Things just started to fall apart with the secondary, and I wasn't surprised by it at all. You had Rodney McLeod out before the game, which means Chris Maragos had to step in. He got burnt, took a terrible angle on the long Sterling Shepard touchdown. I thought Rasul Douglas, since we're going to talk about the secondary, we have to talk about Rasul Douglas getting his first career interception, because
my son,
that was an excellent play, and I'm very excited for his future here in Philly. I thought he had a very solid game, maybe a little over aggressive on some plays that but he was flying up the field, man. I love to see that aggressive mentality. So how did you feel that the injuries impacted the Eagles secondary and their overall performance?
Right, I'll tell you this. Douglas not only had a good game, but on the plays in which there were problems, you saw really promising things.
Right.
On the play where he missed that Brandon Marshall tackle, and you know, on that quick little, you know, just turnaround bubble pass where he's Eli sees the off coverage, just hits it right away. If he's more aware, he had a play on that ball. He was ahead of that ball. Mm-hmm. He easily had a play on it, but he was coming in for the tackle. His tackling is the biggest thing that concerns me. He keeps on making these tackles at the knees, which, okay, they're working now, but some, you know, savvy wide receiver is going to hurl you real quick, and then you're going to be on the ground. You know, he needs to learn how to tackle more consistently.
Yeah.
And then the touchdown that he gave up to Sterling, or no, it wasn't a touchdown. It was called back because Sterling Shepard didn't control the ball to the ground.
Right.
He was in really, really good position on that play, and Shepard ran the correct route. Rasul Douglas played it correctly. Eli threw the correct ball to the exact spot he needed to be played to. Good defensive play, good offensive play, offense wins it. You know, like that's mm-hmm. the way football goes sometimes. And so even on those plays you may pick on him, he looked really good. Jalen Mills, let me give you some context right now. Rasul Douglas is a third round rookie playing in his second game, his first ever career start, and the Giants offense targeted Jalen Mills 21 times. That is a PFF record in their charting. 21 times. And he's not, oh my gosh, he's,
look, I get that he got targeted a lot because especially early in the game he was playing a lot of, they were playing a lot of soft coverage and they were passing short and hoping that their guys would break a tackle, and I thought Mills and Douglas did decent, a really good job at that, especially early in the game at shutting that down after the catch. But 21 times, man, and he got just destroyed on that sluggo by Odell that gave him their first touchdown, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it's 21 times, dude. I didn't even realize it was that much. That's crazy.
Right. And here's the thing about Mills, where, like, you know, you heard my frustration there. The thing about Mills is that he's competitive and he loves to play. He likes to tackle the ball and everything, but one of the major things that a cornerback needs is, whether it's physical, which it usually is, or even mental, which it can be for some of the great corners, or some combination of the both, a corner needs to be able to recover when they get beat, right? Like the most important thing for a cornerback to be able to do is to be able to lose off of a break or lose off of a release and then have some sort of redeeming quality, be it length, be it ball skills, be it reactionary quickness, to get back into the route and to get back to a competing place. And Mills just has none of that. Just if you beat Mills, there's nothing he can do about it. Like, he has no pickup speed. He doesn't have enough quickness to close back down on you. He's not sharp enough to, like, diagnose the route or anything like that. He just, the redemptive qualities when he gets beat aren't there. He's just a body out there. I mean, he should not have a place starting in this secondary once Darby gets back healthy, from what we've seen from Rasul Douglas and Jalen Mills so far.
Right. Yeah. And look, I'm going to take a quick second here to pat myself on the back and then unpat it because my
That's
week,
weird.
If you go to LockedOnEagles.com, you'll see my article about Zach Ertz. And I talked about it on the Friday show with the preview that Ertz was going to have a big day, 8 catches, 55 yards, plus a touchdown. So it was a solid day. He dropped that one and Wentz went right back to him and put it on him, and he was able to haul it in. That was a good call on my part. Made a little money off him on Daily Fantasy, which is always nice. And then when we're up 14-7, he fumbles. How that creeping sense of doubt that just seems like that this team couldn't manage to get, like, you knew what was coming. You knew we were in trouble after that happened, and I felt like we weren't going to be able to recover from it. What does that say about this team, that we didn't lose in our typical fashion like we've tended to do over the last couple of years?
I'll tell you what the most impressive thing for me going into kind of those last, like, 6-7 minutes of the fourth quarter, the lack of panic on Carson Wentz, I think is what I'll call it. And I say that, you know, because he didn't necessarily, you know, drive the ball down the field. Okay, so it's, the Eagles are down 3. It's 24-21. Carson Wentz has, you know, only 4 passing attempts on that drive, which for a drive that was mostly under the 3-minute mark, that's surprising, right? But he's got, he completes 3 out of the 4 of those passes. He picks up 27 yards when he does so. The one that he doesn't get is that 3rd and 7 to Jeffrey, where there was the offensive pass interference that was called anyway.
Right.
And then you have that second drive to put Elliott in position to hit that 61-yarder, where Wentz made a very tough throw to Jeffrey to pick up 19 yards, right? Really trusted Jeffrey, fired it in there. Jeffrey gets out of bounds. That's a great play overall. But what you saw from Wentz over the fourth quarter, and I tweeted out his fourth quarter stats when the Eagles were either trailing or when they were tied up, and he looked really, really good. I'm pretty sure he was 6 for 9 or something like that, 60 yards, and he had that DPI call that he got down the field on Eli Apple, who, by the way, I'll pat myself on the back. I said in my Bleeding Green Nation preview of the game, please target Eli Apple. He sucks. And we spent a lot of time targeting Eli Apple, which was nice.
Yeah.
But Wentz, who is very I don't want to say mistake prone, but we talk about these turnover worthy plays who can be very cavalier with the football, who can take a lot of risks, did well not to there at the end of the game. And in a game in which, I don't know what you think, but for me, Carson Wentz didn't play terribly well. You know, he kind of had like just one of his more pedestrian games. Wasn't terribly impressive. Right. He handled that fourth quarter situation very, very well. I mean, what did you think about how Wentz played overall? What were your thoughts?
He was making better decision as far as not putting the ball in risky situations as he's prone to do. I thought his processing was a little slow at times, and I agree he did make some tough throws towards the end, though, and kind of did what you wanted him to do. He missed that deep ball earlier in the game, which the deep ball accuracy is continuing to be an issue, which is concerning. But overall, like you said, pretty pedestrian and not terrible, which, you know, when the run game is going, that's all you need. And to highlight that point, okay, Wentz only had 161 yards through the air, but we had 193 yards rushing. Now, if I were to give you these stats and tell you that this team lost, you'll know exactly why. Sterling Shepard, 7, 133, and a touchdown. Odell Beckham, 9, 79, 2 touchdowns. Brandon Marshall, 8, 66. Evan Ingram, 5, 45. They passed for 366 yards on us. 3 touchdowns, right? Okay. Why do they lose? 17 carries, 49 yards, 2.9 average, 0 touchdowns. That's exactly how you lose a ball game. And when you take into account that one of those runs were for 20 yards, you're looking at 16 carries for 29 yards. Oof. That is that efficiency. Because you can have 20 carries and 80 yards and go, cool, we averaged 4 yards per carry. That's what we want. But if one of those runs is like a 60-yard, you know, carry, I retweeted something about Joe Thomas talking about that too. He goes, you want 4, 5. You know, maybe 3 and then 6. You don't want 1, 2, -1, so on and so forth, which is what the New York Giants game rushing was only able to produce against us. So props to the front 7 for shutting that down just enough to be able to keep us into a game that could have gotten out of hand in the second half with the Giants passing game.
No, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we have to look at this secondary and be terrified right now. You know, if we can't get McLeod, Watkins, and Darby back this week.
Yeah.
Obviously, Darby's not coming back, but two of those three, that's scary. You've got, right now, again, these corners are not the greatest thing, you know, since sliced bread. And it's the Giants were a team that was, you know, kind of built to take advantage of these Eagles' corners. You know, we had to play that off coverage that we did because they're so dynamic. But you're going to, you know, you've got up on the slate coming ahead now. You've got at LA Chargers, and you got versus the Cardinals. And those are two teams that like to air out the football. That's how they prefer to do it. Obviously, the Cardinals don't have David Johnson. Melvin Ingram just went down with a knee injury in the Chargers game during the 4 o'clock slate. And so if neither of those teams have their star running back, they're going to look to take advantage of those corners. Eagles have got to figure out a better way to mask them. You know, I was expecting more cover 3 kind of zone coverages. They were looking at more off man sort of stuff, and you know, Eli is smart if we could take advantage of that. Same thing with Phillip Rivers, same thing with Carson Palmer. And so, you know, hiding those corners and getting back to health, obviously, you know, bringing Jordan Hicks and Fletcher Cox back will really assist us in that regard. But you got to figure out what to do about those corners, man.
Yep. Hey, look, we can break down this game all day, but the bottom line is we're 2-1. The Giants are 0-3. We are the masters of our own destiny. We'll be previewing, and we'll be talking about this game more because, look, I love to talk about beating up on the Giants. So,
oh my goodness, yes.
Ben and I will be looking at the All-22 when that drops on Tuesday. We'll be talking about it throughout the week. We're going to be previewing the Los Angeles Chargers game coming up. Hopefully, we can get that's on the road. Is that am I correct? At 4 o'clock.
Yes, sir. In that 33,000-foot stadium or 33,000-seat stadium. There it is.
Yeah. So it's not so much the home field crowd advantage. It's more just the traveling to the West Coast. But then it's a 4 o'clock game, so some of that's offset a little bit. So big win for the Eagles. Ben, any closing thoughts?
Oh, my over/under on the sacks was a little bit off, considering that we had 0. But I mean, like, people might look at that number and freak out a little bit. I don't think Eli held the ball for more than 2 seconds, literally the entire game. Pass rush did its job.
Yeah, at any point. Yeah, the game plan was definitely hit 1 step, hit 3 steps, get the ball out, don't care kind of thing. And, you know, we were able to take advantage with 2 picks, so there we are. All right, so this edition of Locked On Eagles was brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Get into all the action with MyBookie.com, where they will match your deposit up to a 100% bonus. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. As always, keep it locked on here. On Locked On Eagles, fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.